is the Todd and Friends podcast.
I don't like to waffle on predictions. That doesn't mean I always hope I'm right.
Oh, what's he going to do? Oh, come on.
I'm with you.
So, thank you.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Todd, I knew we'd agree on something here.
From the KWLM Sports Studio.
I'm your host, Todd Brigeth, and joining us on this Wednesday is Sean Bolson. He's been with us right from the start of the Todd and Friends podcast, which is getting up awful close to 1,000 episodes now, Sean. And boy, here comes some nice weather for us. Looks like we're going to be able to get out on the golf course. I've got plans for today and looking forward to some league play, that Thursday league at Eagle Creek coming up not too far in the distance. I'm getting pretty excited to get out there and play some more golf, Sean.
Yeah, I am too. I know today's nice, and then I think we hit kind of a rough stretch the rest of the week with chance for rain.
Yeah.
But looks like after Monday we could be in the clear. So I'm excited to get out there. I've only been out a couple times, but it'll all happen. The weather will shape up. You know, it's been so much wind.
Yeah.
It's just been brutal. But, yeah, you know, it's spring, and we kind of got a false sense of an early golf season with a very, very warm winter. And then we, you know, we haven't had perfect weather right now, but it'll come.
Yeah, no doubt. Looking forward to it. And when you're watching golf on TV, you're watching two people win, Scottie Scheffler and Nelly Korda. She's won 5 tournaments in a row, and there was a major, was it last week or this past weekend, that she won to finish off 5 wins in a row, including a major. Scheffler, 4 out of 5, including the Masters. Boy, they're the best players in golf on the men's and women's tours right now.
Yeah, it's not even close right now on the men's tour. And, you know, Nelly, it's nice to see her playing so well, because that tour had been dominated by, you know, you had a lot of foreign golfers that
right.
I had never heard of or been able to watch. And then to see her kind of catapult to the top is really exciting. I grew up watching her dad, Peter, play tennis. Her brother, Sebastian, is quite a tennis player. And then her sister, you know, also is a great golfer. But she's really jumped up to that number one spot. You know, recently just playing really well. So that's exciting to see. And, you know, enough said about Scheffler. What he's doing to the fields right now is it's Tiger-like. You know, I hate throwing major comparisons out there, but what Scottie Scheffler is doing is incredible. And we haven't seen that for quite a while.
No doubt. And I saw a stat yesterday. I can't quite quote it exactly, but the lead that Scheffler has for number one in the world golf rankings over the number two player, and I can't remember who that is right now. Oh, it's Schauffele. It's Xander Schauffele's number two in the world right now. But the lead that Scheffler has over Schauffele is larger than the lead that Schauffele has over Tiger Woods in the world golf rankings, and he's at 788. So that's what kind of a lead Scheffler has and how much better he is than everybody else. And for Korda, her lead over the second best player in the world golf rankings is larger than the lead the number two player has over number 185. So those two are just dominating the game at something we haven't seen for a while.
Yeah, no, we haven't. I did see some stat also that Scheffler would have to go on like a, I don't know how many, 5-6 year run at number one to even eclipse the amount of weeks Tiger Woods had at number one.
Yep.
So, you know, the lead, you look at it, and as we know, golf comes and it goes. Some days you feel you're really good. Some days you don't. They're on a little different level. But it just makes you appreciate, you know, what we're seeing right now, because, you know, after Tiger, we all kind of thought, man, that's a once-in-a-generation golfer. And he is a once-in-a-generation golfer. But what Scheffler is doing right now for the golf fan, it's pretty impressive to compete at that level week in and week out and just continue to get it done. You know, 4 wins and a second in your last 5 tour events
crazy.
When you're generally battling the 144 best players in the field every single week, to come out on top like that is incredible.
Yeah, he's been fun to watch. And the women's game, to get traction, I think they need a superstar. They need a Nelly Korda to be consistently good over a multi-year time frame. They've had players flash to the top. They have a dominant year, and then they step back. That was even Nelly Korda a few years ago. She came to the top, and then she stepped back a little bit. They need her to kind of be sustained excellence here for a while, I think, to really bring more eyeballs to that game.
Yeah, and, you know, we've seen that in other sports. You know, we have Caitlin Clark just got to a level that was unprecedented in women's basketball, really put women's basketball on the map. Nelly Korda, you know, being an American, being a, you know, a dominant player for the last how long? I mean, these are the kinds of things that can bring that popularity back. And all of a sudden you have a record number of young girls playing golf, which is exciting for everybody. So, and that breeds that next talent, the generation of talent. And so watching it and seeing it happen is really exciting and exciting for her. And, you know, what a family of athletes she comes from.
Yeah.
But you see a lot of families have athletes like that that don't ever eclipse the level she's at now. So very exciting to see, and hopefully it'll continue to grow the game of women's golf.
Yeah, that's right. Hopefully that just continues to get bigger and bigger. Well, the draft is tomorrow night, Sean, and for weeks we've been hearing the Vikings are going to trade up. The reason they got the 23rd pick was to package it in a deal and trade up and move into the 3, 4, or 5 spot to try and get their quarterback of the future. This week, some of the same guys that were saying that for weeks are now saying it appears as though it's going to be too expensive for the Vikings' taste to move up into one of those spots, because they may not be the only ones trying to do that. The Giants at number 6 might be, and they would have a big advantage on the Vikings at number 6 versus number 11 being the best asset to offer. So now I'm hearing some of those same guys say it's more likely they feel that the Vikings won't pay that price. They'll wait and see who's at 11 and who's at 23 and move on from there.
Yeah, so many different mock drafts I've looked at have so many different scenarios. The one thing I do think is I think Kwesi knows he's missed. He hasn't been great, and I think he's going to come out with all guns on, you know, slinging. What are we going to do? He is going to be gone if he doesn't make a splash. So if he takes a swing and a miss at a quarterback, well, at least he took a big swing.
Yeah.
So I'm not convinced they're not going to move, but I'm also not convinced that, you know, if they could go up and get May, you know, depending on what they can get, that'll really dictate it. Because I looked at a stat that since, I forget how many years it's been, but the last 56 quarterbacks taken, 46% have signed a second contract with the team. So essentially when you're mortgaging your draft capital and your future draft pick, 50% of these quarterbacks, you know, a little less than 50, actually come back and sign that second year or second deal, which makes them pretty much like a franchise type quarterback.
Yeah.
So, you know, am I willing to take a shot to get somebody? Yeah, but man, you really got to be sure it's the right guy. And even if you are an expert and you think it's the right guy, you're still hitting at a 50% clip historically.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, these guys, that's all they've been doing. And they didn't just start on their quarterback prep this year. They've been looking at this draft class since they took over the Vikings. They knew this was going to be an excellent draft class. They've been scouting and evaluating these guys really for the last 2 years since they took over as the Vikings decision makers. I'm talking KOC and Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, of course. And we'll, you know, so they know these guys. There isn't any quibbling who they'd like to have. It seems like Drake May, because they figure they aren't going to be able to get, you know, Williams or Daniels. They're going to go in the top two almost certainly. But now New England, you know, a lot of people say, nope, they're probably going to sit and take a QB. So then it's probably J.J. McCarthy. And even as much as I've been on McCarthy, that makes me nervous to give up 11, 23, probably an additional first-round pick next year, because you have the 11 versus the Giants 6. And that might be where the Vikings are going, yeah, 3 number ones for the 4th best QB in the draft might not be worth it. And as much as I've been on McCarthy, that makes me really nervous too.
Yeah, I agree. And you don't have to go back very far. I mean, it was the Jets, you know, really figuring out that, hey, they're going to draft Zach Wilson, this can't-miss guy out of BYU who has been a complete flop, and now he went to the Denver Broncos. And so, you know, because of where somebody is taken in the draft does not just ensure success. Now,
right,
drafting a high quarterback can lead to a franchise quarterback, which we all know. But it's just such a slippery slope of what am I willing to give up in order to get somebody who, you know, we really like. And I've said it before, if you're in love with a quarterback in the top 10, take them. If you like them, that's a little high to take them. And I'm concerned that the Vikings, you're right. I mean, you trade that much to get right now what the analysts have as a 4th best quarterback.
Yeah.
That's a tough ask.
Yes, it is. And that's a big gamble. You know, it's a gamble to trade multiple first to move up and take a QB anyway. But at least if you're moving up and getting the best rated quarterback, or even the second best, but the fourth best. Now, I know this is a terrific class, and they say the intangibles for McCarthy are off the charts, his leadership ability, that everything he does in a building to make his teammates better, that he absolutely is aces on that. The biggest question that most of us have about him is that he was never really asked to win games at Michigan because they had so many dominant performances. So can he do it if he's asked? I like to think he could, but I guess you just don't know because he wasn't asked to in college.
You know, and I go back to, I look at the 49ers, I look at the Chiefs, I look at the Ravens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had Lamar going at the end of the first round. You had Mahomes going, what, in the early teens, 12 mm-hmm. to 15, somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. You have Brock Purdy, who was, you know, Mr. Irrelevant, the last guy picked. You know, it's easy to look at that, and then you go, you know, you look at the Bills and you look at the Bengals, and they got Burrow and Allen, which were those big-time prospects that were can't misses, and they've proven to be good quarterbacks. So
yeah.
It really becomes a gamble, and you really, really, really need to base your decision on, you know, all of the things your scouts and your GM has put together to make the right decision for you. And to be blunt, Kwesi hasn't done a very good job of that. Now, KOC, I love. I hope he's our coach forever.
Yeah.
I'm not sold on Kwesi, and
yeah.
and this is his chance to change our minds and go, man, this guy does know what he's doing. So
yeah,
it'll be extremely exciting and interesting to watch the draft. The draft is going to, you know, be as exciting as watching, you know, games. I've never been so excited to watch a draft.
Right.
So we'll see what they do, and, you know, we also can't forget we do need help elsewhere.
Yes.
We could shore up the defensive side of the ball. We could possibly use an offensive lineman, and so we do have plenty of needs out there, and so where they, you know, decide to go, it will be entertaining for all of us to see tomorrow night.
That's for sure. I've been just hoping for a quarterback, and you know, now I'm going, you know, everything I read and hear is that it's going to be awful expensive. If they take their shot and they get a guy, you know, I'm on board, whoever it is, whoever they wind up with. It's going to be exciting. It's just been fun that the Vikings have been talked about so much leading up to the draft tomorrow night. The big news right now, though, in Minnesota sports, too, is the Timberwolves and how well they're playing. And they've really handled the Suns the first two games. Game one in particular, that was Timberwolves from the start. The Suns gave them a fight at least last night, but in the second half, the Timberwolves just kind of wore them down.
They did. I'm really, really happy with the Mike Conley veteran leadership play. McDaniels on the defensive end has been awesome. Gobert's been good. You know, Cat's been okay. Yesterday, I was frustrated. You know, Durant picked up two fouls right away, and they said, hey, Kevin Durant knows how to play in foul trouble, and you never really saw him have to sit long periods of time.
Yep.
Cat comes in recklessly, picks up his third foul in the first quarter, just kind of an irresponsible move. He did come out in the second half. I think he had eight straight, played pretty well, but I'd like to see his consistency and just his basketball intelligence continue to grow because he makes some tough decisions in the wrong time that could really cost your team. But, you know, right now, really, you talk about getting manhandled by the Suns all year long and coming out in the playoffs and making some statements. I mean, this is a really, really exciting series so far, and they've been dominant the first two games.
Yeah, to me, it looked like Edwards came out in game one just because he was taking a lot of shots from people. When they were talking about their 0-3 record against the Suns, they were quick to point out he only averaged 14 points a game in those three losses, too. So he was hearing that. I mean, these guys pay attention. He knows that people are kind of blaming him for being 0-3 against the Suns. So he said, well, let's just change the narrative a little bit on us against the Suns. And he wasn't the only one. Everybody came out with that frame of mind in game one. And then the Suns made their adjustments. They defended Edwards much better in game two. But other guys stepped up for the Timberwolves. It showed the depth of their lineup, I thought, last night.
It did. And Edwards, you know, every time he tried to get to the basket, they had another guy right there. He could not get all the way to the rim very often. So McDaniels, Conley, Gobert, you know, Cat at times, all stepped up. And Edwards is kind of the guy right now when I talk about the Bulls. You just expect him to get 20, 30 a game
yep.
because he's just that good. but having the pieces around him step up and play. And, you know, the defensive effort, what, five times all year the Suns were held under 100 points, and we've done it twice in a row in the playoffs. That's really impressive, because when you look at Kevin Durant, at Beals, you know, these guys are great. And then you got Booker, who, you know, not that long ago was one of the best players in the NBA.
Yep.
Just really frustrated. And, you know, Grayson Allen, it did hurt him. He went down yesterday. He wasn't healthy, and then he re-injured the ankle. But, man, we did what we needed to do. And I think it's entertaining, too, when they're getting to the rim and Gobert's in the paint. They're looking to kick it out. They're not finishing around the rim very much. He's just been a really great defensive presence. And then, you know, with McDaniels just really trying to shut down whoever they decide to put him on, they've done a really nice job.
How about the free throw shooting for Gobert? He's not missing any foul shots. So that hack a Rudy tactic, they can't use that. If they feed the ball into him, they were fouling him for quite a bit of the season. But, boy, he's really smoothed out his delivery and is having a terrific postseason. And his defense goes without saying. It looks like he's probably the defensive player of the year again this year, and well-deserved, and is playing some terrific basketball.
Yeah, you talked about the free throw. You know, Finch challenged in the first quarter, really early in the game. They called the charge on Gobert, and he, you know, got an and one. They reversed the call, and then that was the only free throw he missed. And then McDaniels picked it up, got fouled, you know, went to the line and made a couple points. That was a nice 4-point challenge. Mm-hmm. But then the rest of the game, Gobert was, I think, perfect from the line. So, I mean, really impressive. He's just doing really things and upped his level to a playoff level, and just been just such a force for the Wolves.
Yeah, he has. Hey, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about the NHL playoffs just getting underway as well, this year without the Wild. But you follow the league in general. Who do you like this year?
Well, you know, Carolina, I do like Carolina in the East quite a bit. You got Toronto, you got Boston, and, you know, that was a series where Boston wins game one, Toronto rolls their eyes and go, oh my gosh, with this setup, now we got this bad, you know, they've been out on the first round how many years in a row? They came back, evened at 1-1, so you have a really good series there. The Islanders, you know, were had a historic collapse, up 3-1. I think they were up 3-0, then they were up 3-1. They ended up losing 5-3 in the last 5 minutes of the game, so that's good. This, you know, the Winnipeg series, Winnipeg and Colorado are going back to Colorado 1-1, and those are two exciting teams, too. So if I were to pick right now, you know, I think the Oilers are going to be tough to beat out of the West. And you know, I would look at, you know, probably could the winner of that Boston-Toronto series and Carolina as the favorites in the East.
You know, Boston suffered that loss in the first round of the playoffs last year after setting an NHL record for points in a single season. So you really, it's hard to predict NHL playoff series. The game just seems to change so much once they get to the playoffs.
It does. And, you know, in the NBA, the high seeds won all the first round games.
Yep.
And in the NHL, that just, you know, it just doesn't happen all the time, because you do. You have an 8 seed that can get a hot goalie and make a run all the way to the cup final. So NHL's a little more wide open as far as picking it. You know, nobody thinks the Lakers are going to come back against Denver. You know, Boston's going to cruise. You have your higher seeds that pretty much are shoe-ins to get deep into the playoff run. NHL, not so much. So it does add an extra entertainment factor, because you really don't know who's going to win.
Sean, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
Sean Bolson joining us here on the Todd and Friends podcast. It's brought to you by Granite Bank in Spicer and Cold Spring. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Watch for future episodes of the Todd and Friends podcast at KWLM.com or on the air here at KWLM 1340 AM and 96.3 FM.